The following program is for entertainment purposes only. Betting involves financial risk and is not suitable for everyone. Always bet responsibly and never wager more than you can afford to lose.
Welcome to Let's Take the Man's Money with Gio on CKDJ 107.9, your go-to source for NFL betting insights, odds, and expert picks. Whether you're chasing that perfect parlay or looking for the latest line movement, Gio has the strategies and stats to help you beat the book. Get your playbook ready. It's Sunday morning, and it's time to take the man's money.
Welcome back, everyone. Week 13 of Let's Take the Man's Money, live from the studios of CKTJ. I'm back with my producer, Romano DeFranco. Good morning, Romano. We're now 13 weeks into the season. Wow. Don't forget to follow me on X, hashtag LTTMMNFL. That's Let's Take the Man's Money, NFL. Tell me who your picks are, any favorites you may have, straight up, against the spread, or a total you may like, maybe a parlay or a teaser play. Let me know where you're listening from for a chance to win some Let's Take the Man's Money swag. Congratulations to this week's winner, Christopher Carter of Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Good job, Christopher. Won't you look great cashing in your winning tickets at the window with some Let's Take the Man's Money gear. I hope you win a lot of money, Christopher. Maybe you could take your family to Disneyland. That would be nice. So how'd I do last week, Romano? Roll the tape, if you please, sir. I don't believe I'm going to say it, but take the Chicago Bears +3.5 over the Minnesota Vikings and take under 39.5 points. You may even want to sprinkle a little money on the Bears money line. Ooh, feel like I need to take a shower after saying that. Well, let's just ride the Detroit Lions freight train as long as we can, lay the points, and take the Detroit Lions -7.5 over the Indianapolis Colts and take over 49.5. Take the Miami Dolphins -7.5 over the New England Patriots and take over 46. Take the Tampa Bay Buccaneers -6 over the New York Giants and take under 41. Sorry to my buddy Lorenzo, but I'm betting against your team, my friend. After all, we're here to take the man's money. With Lattimore not available to cover Lamb and defensive end Micah Parsons healthy and playing, the Cowboys have a chance in this game. Take the Dallas Cowboys +10.5 over the Washington Commanders and take under 45. Call me crazy, but take the Carolina Panthers +11 over the Kansas City Chiefs and take under 43. Take the Houston Texans -7.5 over the Tennessee Titans and take under 40.5. Take the Las Vegas Raiders +6 over the Denver Broncos and take over 41. Ooh, I will not make it to the window with that bet. Take the San Francisco 49ers +5.5 over Green Bay and take under 44.5. Take the Arizona Cardinals -1 over the Seattle Seahawks and take under 47.5. And that's my style of football. I like old-fashioned smash mouth. Take the Philadelphia Eagles -3 over the Los Angeles Rams and take under 49. That's what we'll do here. Let's take the Los Angeles Chargers +2.5 over the Baltimore Ravens and take over 50.5 points. For my Let's Take the Man's Money parlay play, we'll go with the Chicago Bears +3.5 over Minnesota Vikings, Philadelphia Eagles -3 over the Los Angeles Rams, and the Los Angeles Chargers +2.5 over Baltimore. A $25 bet gets us $180.74. As for my three-game six-point teaser, I realize that some of the games, the Chargers game is the Monday nighter and Philadelphia LA Rams is the Sunday nighter. So we'll take 3 1 o'clock games for you. We'll tease the Chicago Bears from +3.5 to +9.5. We'll tease the Detroit Lions down to -1.5 from 7.5. And we'll do the same thing with the Houston Texans, -7.5 to -1.5. A $25 bet will win us $62.50. Okay, so by my account, that puts us, that's still a profitable 7-5 against the spread. I think we went 5-7 with the over-under plays. Oh, we had such a good start. I think I got the first 5 correct. We missed our parlay play. There was a Monday night football game. Didn't go our way. The LA Chargers lost at home to Baltimore by a little bit more than the spread. Close, but no cigarro. We didn't get the teaser play either. Teased down the Lions down -7.5 and the Texans also down from 7.5. Now, this is a normal play for bettors on teasers. They'll take a gain that 6.5, and they'll tease it down and crosses the 6, crosses the 3. And, you know, it's a good strategy, but I like to go the other way sometimes. You'll cross the 10, you'll cross the 13. The reason why I did both of those games was the Lions never lose. So if you tease them down, they're gonna win the game. All they have to do is win by 1.5, and you know the Lions are going to win. And the Texans were playing the Titans, who can't cover, let alone handicapping them an extra 6 points, but that didn't work out. Anyways, let's break down last week's games. We lost our very first game, the number one play, the Chargers. That was the Monday night game, the Harbaugh Bowl. It was still a good call. I mean, the Chargers playing very well, but, you know, in retrospect, Baltimore had a little extra rest, so that didn't work out. The Bears almost won against the Vikings. They covered the 3.5, barely, but they almost actually won the game. Some really bad decisions in that game. And then on Thursday, Chicago's head coach was fired. Then the third game was Philadelphia over the they covered. And remember I said last week, Philadelphia never scores in the first quarter. Take the under in the first half. Well, they got 3 points in the first quarter. And if you did follow my advice and took the under in the first half, you would have cashed in as well. The Houston Texans, that's the funny one that happened last week. My goodness. They lost 32-27. Some real funny business. Houston even had a pick six and didn't cover. A little 7:02 call nonsense going on there. And of course, Detroit covered. And the final game was the Dallas Cowboys in that weird one. They actually beat the Commanders 34-26. The rest of the games, Tampa Bay easily covered over the Giants. The Cardinals let us down. You know, Arizona coming off the bye, they had a lot of momentum going into the bye. Another team not covering their week off, after the week off, extra time to prepare. That's not working this year. San Francisco, +5.5 over Green Bay, didn't work out. I thought the team would rally for the quarterback, but there's just too many bodies missing from San Francisco's lineup. Las Vegas and Denver, they had a chance to cover. They were first and goal at the one. I realize it was 25 seconds left. How do you not get 1 yard? The Raiders are very funny this year. We might talk about them later. The Carolina Panthers almost beat the Chiefs. They took them right down to the wire. They covered the, I think it was a 13 by the time kickoff. We had them +11. And it took a last-second field goal for Kansas City. That's two weeks in a row now with the Thursday game that just happened, or rather the Friday game. Kansas City just holding on. And the Miami Dolphins easily covered over the Patriots. So teams went 2-2 after the bye week. The Bucks and Giants played each other. So one team covered, one team did not. Cardinals lost to the Seahawks, who actually, ironically, won the week before after their bye. And the Panthers covered against the Chiefs. So 2-2. Teams are now 7-13 off the bye. This week we've got the Atlanta Falcons, Buffalo Bills, Kansas, Cincinnati Bengals, New Orleans Saints, New York Jets, and the Jacksonville Jaguars coming off the bye. Straight up, the Detroit Lions and Kansas City remain on top, 11-1, followed by Philadelphia, a very sneaky good team, at 9-2. Same with my Minnesota Vikings and Buffalo, all 9-2. Green Bay's at 9-3. On the other side, Cleveland, Tennessee, New York Jets, Carolina, and the New England Patriots are all 3-9. Jacksonville's 2-9. And the Giants and Raiders are now 2-10 after they played earlier in the week. Against the spread, Detroit and Denver lead the way, both 9-3, making a lot of money for backers. Pittsburgh's 8-3. My Vikings 7-3-1. Not too bad. On the opposite side, the Dallas Cowboys are money losers at 4-8. But how about the Jets at 3-8? And now the Giants are 3-9. Tennessee 2-9 after they covered. They were actually 1-9 going into last week. Over under, Baltimore leads the way. 10 overs to only 2 unders. And the Bengals in Carolina, believe it or not, are right behind at 8-3. On the other side, Atlanta, the Chargers, and my Minnesota Vikings have only gone over the total 4 and under 7. So keep that in mind. Houston and Chicago and the Giants are 4-8. As for my top 12, not much changed. The Detroit Lions, number 1. Buffalo Bills are off their bye. They're at number 2. Kansas City, 2 close losses to bad teams since last week's show. Remember, they played last Sunday and then they played on Friday. Very close to losing. Philadelphia Eagles, a sneaky good team, very undervalued. My Vikings are at number 5. 9-2, maybe the worst 9-2 team I've ever seen. I mean, the Vikings a couple of years ago made the playoffs with a pretty good record, but they had won every game by less than a touchdown. And they instantly lost in the playoffs. So kind of deja vu for my Vikings. Steelers at number 6, Baltimore at number 7. The Green Bay Packers with a couple of solid wins since last week's show over the Niners. And then the Dolphins on Thursday night on Thanksgiving. And at number 9, we've got Denver. They routed the Falcons last week. Denver, yeah, I've got them at 9. Sorry, I'm trying to remember off what they did last week. The Chargers are at number 10. Arizona Cardinals slip a little bit. They did not look good after their bye against the road division game. It was in Seattle, so, you know, you could understand that. And then rounding at top 12, the Washington Commanders, they had a bizarre loss. 2 kickoff return touchdowns. They missed a point after 10. Like, if you had the under in that game, you must have been tearing your hair out because it was 10-9 in the fourth quarter. I think the teams missed 3 field goals early, so you're probably thinking this is a very easy under, and then bam, the sky fell. Washington got a touchdown, then Dallas returned the kick for a touchdown. Dallas scored again with seconds left on an 89-yard miracle touchdown. Then that really bizarre kickoff where Dallas ran it back for another touchdown. If you had the under, you were probably very angry. Anyways, 4 games in the book already, and 3 on Thanksgiving. Chicago lost to Detroit. Some terrible time clock management cost Chicago Bears head coach his job finally. You know, it's too bad because I'd said all year the coaching staff for Chicago might be the worst in the league, and you can always bet against them knowing that the coach would find some way to lose. The Giants lost to Dallas 27-20, and Green Bay was all over Miami 30-27, so the home team did not cover in the Detroit game, and oddly enough, well, it's a division game, very close. Dallas covered, Green Bay covered, and then on the Black Friday game, Kansas City barely won, 19-17 over Raiders. The Raiders had a chance there at the very end in a bizarre play, maybe the strangest play of the year, where the center snapped the ball. It didn't look like the quarterback was ready, fumbled the ball. There were flags all over the place, and mysteriously, the refs put the flags away because the Raiders lost the ball, and then Kansas City held on to win. You know, a lot of people singing, thinking that the Chiefs, it's juiced in for the Chiefs, but you know, I'm not sure if I follow that, but if you watch that play, that might be one of the strangest ones of the year. Looking at the board here, this is the time of the show where there's not too much movement of the spreads and the over-unders, but we'll pop in from time to time and take a look at it. I mentioned the teams coming off the bye. Yeah, okay, yeah. They like I said, they went 2-2, 7-13, and there's a bunch of them today. And you know, not all teams coming off the bye will lose or not cover. But it just seems to be one of those things that when people handicap football games, they'll say automatically, well, you know, they've had extra time to prepare, but it's not always the case. So we'll keep an eye on that, anyways. Okay, which games are we going to look at, Romano? When we come back. All right. We'll look at the LA Chargers, Atlanta games, Arizona and Minnesota, and Pittsburgh's going to be traveling to Cincinnati. So some 3 games coming up. All right. You're listening to Let's Take the Man's Money from the studios at CKDJ. I am Gio, and we'll be right back right after this.
CKDJ 1079.
We now return to Let's Take the Man's Money with Gio on CKDJ 1079.
And we're back with Let's Take the Man's Money from the studios of CKDJ. I am Gio. Don't forget to follow me on X, hashtag LTTMMNFL. Drop me a comment for your chance to win some swag. Okay. The first game we're going to look at has the 7-4 Los Angeles Chargers going to Atlanta, where the Falcons are 6-5. The Chargers are -1 right now. Total in this game is 47.5. I have a feeling this line might change. The game feels like a critical one for both teams, each needing a win to stay on track for the postseason. The Chargers are coming off a tough Monday night loss to the Ravens, while the Falcons had a bye to regroup after dropping 2 straight. Both teams have their flaws, which makes this matchup really, really intriguing. Well, what's going on with the Chargers? Well, the big question with the Chargers is their second half performance. It's almost like they've been cursed after halftime. Justin Herbert has been great early in games. He's got the third best QBR in the NFL during the first half, 74.7. But after the break, he falls to 29th with a QBR of just 35.6. As a team, the Chargers are scoring a measly 8.4 points per second half, which is near the bottom of the league. Their Monday night loss to Baltimore showed this pattern clearly. Herbert struggled in the second half, completing just 44% of his passes and failing to push the offense downfield. You saw that against the Cincinnati game, too. They came out like gangbusters against the Bengals, and the Bengals completely took over in the second half of that game. Well, their Monday night loss showed this pattern clearly. Herbert struggled in the second half, completing, like I said, 44% of his passes, failing to push the team downfield. That loss hurt the playoffs hopes for the Chargers. They're now below 80%. Still pretty good, but a win there would have really gone a long way. Defensively, it's been mostly good. They've allowed only 14 passing touchdowns all season, which is impressive. But they've given up 57 points over their last two games. If they can't clean things up, especially in the secondary, Kirk Cousins and the Falcons could make them pay. The Falcons are looking to rebound for Atlanta. You know, the bye week couldn't have come at a better time. They've lost two straight and three of the last four, but somehow still lead the NFC South. The Falcons are trying to fix two glaring issues there: their offensive struggles and their inability to pressure the quarterback. That was a big weakness for them going into the draft. They didn't address it. They did pick up Matthew Judon from the Patriots early in the season to help that, to help their pass rush. I think he's had 2.5 sacks this year. Not great. They've only managed 10 sacks all season. They're lowest total ever through 11 games and the worst in the NFL since 2018. Coach Raheem Morris is reportedly planning to lean heavily on play action, which makes sense. It's been one of their most effective tools this year. The challenge? The Chargers' pass defense is solid, ranking 10th in efficiency. On the flip side, Los Angeles has been vulnerable to big plays, which Atlanta might exploit. If you're a fantasy player, keep an eye on Chargers wide receiver Ladd McConkey. He's been on a roll, scoring 10 or more fantasy points in four of his last five games. Atlanta's defense has struggled against slot receivers, so McConkey could have another big day. For the Falcons, this is a chance for Kirk Cousins to prove he can bounce back. He's coming off two straight games without a touchdown pass, something he's never done in his long career as a starter. If Atlanta's offense, if the Lion can give him some time, he could take advantage of a Chargers secondary that's been shaky in recent weeks. Here's something to consider if you're betting. The Falcons haven't been great against the spread when the line is tight, going 7-15 in their last 22 games when the spread is between +3 and -3, which it is in this game. Both teams have leaned heavily toward the under this year, which each team going 4-7 over under. That said, Atlanta's been strong after a bye with a 15-5 record straight up and 14-6 against the spread in their last 20 games after a bye week. We pointed out that's not happening this year for most of the teams. That rest could make a big difference, especially for a team clinging to their division lead. What to expect? Well, this game feels like it could go either way. The Chargers have the edge in talent, but their second half woes make them hard to trust as road chalk. Meanwhile, the Falcons are rested and playing at home, but their pass rush is so ineffective that it's hard to imagine them consistently getting stops against Herbert. This one will likely stay close, especially if Atlanta can find success with big plays and play action, but the Chargers' firepower on offense should be enough to edge out the win. I'm gonna make a score prediction. I think the Chargers will win this game 24-20. Take the LA Chargers -1 over the Atlanta Falcons and take under 47.5. Our next game has the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are 8-3, visiting the Cincinnati Bengals, who are 4-7 this Sunday in a high-stakes AFC North showdown. The Pittsburgh red zone offense has been one of their weakest links this season, ranking 30th in red zone scoring percentage. Under 50%, 44.7. For much of the season, they relied on late game heroics and defensive strength to secure their wins, but their offense showed some life with two fourth quarter touchdowns in last week's loss to Cleveland. Remember how they played the Baltimore and they got beat up, and they went into Cleveland as favorites and lost. Home division dog, baby. Anyways, head coach Mike Tomlin has emphasized improving execution in critical short yardage and red zone scenarios from the clippings that I've been reading. It could be a game changer against the Bengals defense, allowing opponents to score touchdowns on nearly 71% of their red zone trips, among the worst in the NFL. The Steelers' rushing attack, spearheaded by Jalen Warren and Najee Harris, will be crucial. Warren has emerged as a dynamic option, averaging 7.1 yards per touch over the past three games against the Bengals' run defense that has struggled to contain opponents. The Steelers could find success on the ground, setting up easier opportunities in the red zone. A little Bengals storyline, it will be Burrow versus the Steelers' stifling secondary, Joe Burrow, the quarterback. And statistically, he's in the midst of a career year, leading the Bengals with three consecutive games of three or more touchdown passes, tying his personal best streak. However, he faces one of the toughest challenges of his season against Pittsburgh's elite secondary. Steelers lead the NFL in opposing QBR, 51.2, and have excelled in zone coverage, recording 10 interceptions from zone schemes. His ability to disguise coverage and generate turnovers could disrupt Burrow's rhythm, even with the Bengals' impressive fourth-ranked zone QBR. Oh, maybe because they're always trailing late in the game, the Bengals tend to score more in the fourth quarter. Maybe take the Bengals second half if they're trailing big in an in-play bet. If you can get an ATS bet for the second half, you might want to consider that. Anyways, wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase, Burrow's favorite target, will need to shine against the Steelers defense that has limited big plays through the air this year. Chase's ability to stretch the field and create after the catch could be pivotal, especially if Pittsburgh focuses on limiting the Bengals' short passing game. A key matchup that you want to watch is the Steelers' rushing attack versus the Bengals' run defense. With Warren in fine form and Harris providing power, Pittsburgh has a clear path to exploit a Bengals' defense that has given up over 100 rushing yards or a touchdown in every game this season. Establishing the run will help the Steelers control the clock and limit Burrow's opportunities. Joe Burrow versus the Steelers' secondary will be another matchup. Pittsburgh's ball-hawking secondary has been a nightmare for opposing quarterbacks, and Burrow will need to be patient and precise. If the Steelers can generate pressure without blitzing, Burrow could struggle to find time for deeper plays to Chase and his other wide receiver. Oh, my goodness, what's his name? T. Higgins. Historically, the Steelers and Bengals share one of the NFL's fiercest rivalries, characterized by physical play and emotional highs. I guess the AFC North is, all four teams do that. But this one has been fierce the last couple of years. Pittsburgh has the upper hand, including winning their last two trips to Cincinnati outright. This season, both teams are at a crossroads. The Steelers are chasing a division title, while the Bengals are clinging to whatever slim hopes they have. Their backs are really against the wall right now. Cincinnati's defense has been particularly vulnerable in divisional games following their bye week, allowing 36 points per game in their last four such contests. Conversely, Mike Tomlin's teams have historically thrived as underdogs in December, going 29-19 straight up, 34-12 against the spread when getting fewer than 10 points. A fantasy factor is Jalen Warren, the running back. He's a dual threat and could be a standout in fantasy as an option, possibly even a prop bet play. He's outperformed Harris in efficiency. I've been calling out Harris all year, and as soon as I did, actually, Harris started to play better. But recently, Warren has been the guy. And with Cincinnati's leaky run defense, Warren could see plenty of touches in a game where the Steelers will aim to control the tempo. So expect Warren to post strong numbers, especially if Pittsburgh leans on the run in the red zone. So a good pickup on fantasy today, or even a prop bet for the Steelers. A win solidifies their playoff positioning and keeps them in the race for the AFC North crown. Pittsburgh has achieved relative to preseason expectations. They've put their skeptics behind them, I think. Yeah, well, they've had a bit of a soft schedule too. 4-32 strength of schedule. And a reliance on close wins. Five of eight victories have been by one score. For the Bengals, this game is critical. It's a must win. At 4-7, their playoff chances are slim. Cincinnati's games after the bye week have historically hit the over, 7-1 since 2017. And this season, the Bengals are 8-3 to the over. Yeah. With Tomlin's strong track record and as an underdog and Pittsburgh's recent success in Cincinnati, I think the Steelers present, for me, a very appealing case for bettors. I often get the Steelers wrong, but I haven't got them wrong in a couple of weeks now. So take the Pittsburgh Steelers plus 3 over the Cincinnati Bengals and take over 47.
Yes.
All right. Next game up, the Arizona Cardinals, 6-5, travel to Minnesota, where my Vikings are 9-2. The Vikings are 3.5-point favorites. The total in this game is 45.5. Our third game is a very good one. It's an NFC clash. It's a real fascinating contrast, actually, between two totally different teams looking to solidify their playoff hopes. The Vikings riding a 9-2 record, hosting the Cardinals, who are coming off a tough loss to Seattle, but remaining in contention at 6-5. That division is up for grabs. Minnesota, like I said, 3.5-point favorites. The Arizona Cardinals, they're not quite on the ropes, but you know, after that disappointing loss to Seattle, they now face a tough challenge here, the NFL's top-ranked run defense in Minnesota. Quarterback Kyler Murray, whose development as a quarterback has been a focal point all season, will need to show even more maturity in this matchup. Murray has been talking about his improved understanding of defenses, and now it's time for him to prove it against the Vikings' swarming pass rush. Murray's ability to extend plays with his legs has been a defining feature of his game, ranking 4th in rushing yards amongst quarterbacks this season, 380 yards. He only had 2 rushes last week for 9 yards. And if he does not run the ball, the Arizona Cardinals offense doesn't click, in my opinion. However, Minnesota's defense has been exceptional at limiting quarterback rushes, ranking 1st in the NFL and fewest rushing yards allowed to opposing quarterbacks. This is a battle that'll test Murray's adaptability in the pocket and his decision-making when scrambling. Now, the Vikings have been dominant at home, winning 11 consecutive games against the Cardinals, including postseason matchups dating back to 1977, for those of you who like these kind of trends. Their defense, led by coordinator Brian Flores, will look to make life difficult for Murray and force him to stay within the pocket. While Minnesota's defense has struggled against mobile quarterbacks in the past, they boast the NFL's best running defense. Against the QBs, like I said, you know, they're allowing just 6.2 rushing yards per game to opposing quarterbacks. That's very low. Additionally, the Vikings' pass rushes have been impressive, especially with edge rusher Andrew Van Ginkle. 9 sacks, 14 tackles for a loss, a forced fumble, and 2 pick sixes. This guy has to be in the running for Defensive Player of the Year. And he can really disrupt the quarterback's rhythm. If Minnesota can neutralize Murray's ability, mobility, and force him to into tough passing situations, they should be able to extend their home winning streak against Arizona. Vikings quarterback Sam Darnold has been prone to turnovers, tied with Gardner Minshew for the most in the NFL this season. No surprise. While Darnold, he's been serviceable in most games, his mistakes could give Arizona a chance to capitalize, especially if the Vikings are forced into long passing situations. If the Cardinals can generate turnovers through pressure or disguising their coverage, it could shift the momentum into their favor. The Vikings have been dominant at home. They've covered straight 7 meetings at home. Additionally, they have a perfect 11-0 record against Arizona, like I mentioned. It's a team that they sort of have dominated. You know, despite their success against lower teams, the Vikings could struggle to cover the 3.5-point spread against the motivated Cardinals team that is proven capable of delivering close wins. The Vikings' defense is formidable, but Murray's playmaking ability combined with Arizona's ability to exploit mismatches could swing it in favor. You know what? Take the Arizona Cardinals plus 3.5 over my Minnesota Vikings and take under 45. All right. 3 games in the books. After the break, we'll look at Colts Patriots, Seattle Jets, and Titans Commanders. You're listening to Let's Take the Mavs Money. I am Gio. We'll be right back.
We now return to Let's Take the Man's Money with Gio on CKDJ 107.9.
And we're back with Let's Take the Man's Money. Live from the studios of CKDJ, I am Gio. Don't forget to follow me on X, hashtag LTTMMNFL. Drop me a comment. for your chances to win some swag. Okay, our next game. The Indianapolis Colts are 5-7. Are at New England, where the Patriots are 3-9. The Indianapolis Colts are hoping to get their playoff hopes back on track as they face the struggling New England Patriots in Foxborough. This game is crucial for both teams as, well, they try to gain momentum for the stretch run, with the Colts holding a slim chance at the postseason. Meanwhile, the Patriots are simply looking to develop their young quarterback, Drake May, and avoid further setbacks in their rebuilding season. The Colts' offense has faced significant challenges lately, particularly the running game. Jonathan Taylor, who dominated as the NFL's leading rusher in 2021, has seen a sharp decline in production, averaging just 46 yards over the last two games with 2.6 yards per carry. Much of this has been attributed to an undermanned offensive line, which has failed to open up lanes. Left tackle Bernard Raymond and right tackle Braden Smith were the top-ranked duo entering the year. And Quentin Quentin Nelson, he used to be great, not so effective this year. Head coach Shane Steichen will need to find ways to reestablish the running game if the Colts have any hope for not having stagnation on offense. For the Patriots, Drake May, the rookie quarterback, has shown promise despite New England's rough season. Speaking of bad lines, the Patriots might have the worst in the NFL. His 10 touchdown passes have gone to 10 different receivers, but he also has thrown an interception in four straight games, the longest such streak among 2024 quarterbacks. May's growth is key for the Patriots, who have limited hopes for the season, but are focused on his development. And the Colts defense could provide a decent test for May. A stat to know is penalties. They played both teams. Both the Colts and Patriots have struggled with penalties this season, each getting flagged more than 12 times in their respective losses last week. This lack of discipline has hurt both teams' chances to get into a rhythm, and the outcome of the game could hinge on which team is able to clean up their penalties and avoid shooting themselves in the foot. Michael Pittman might be interesting in fantasy. With Josh Downs sidelined due to a shoulder injury, Pittman, he should see an even larger amount of targets. He's coming off one of his best performances of the season with 15.6 fantasy points against the Lions. The Patriots have been vulnerable against wide receivers, allowing the sixth most receiving yards to them in the league, which should give Pittman an opportunity to produce big numbers in this matchup. Some betting insights. The Colts, they're favored by 2.5. They've struggled recently with a 1-3 record against the spread. Remember how they jumped out to one of the best ATS records at the start of the season? They have regressed, but, typical regression to the mean. That's what's happened to the Colts over their last four games. The Patriots have been especially poor at home, covering only once in five home games this season. That was early in the year, too. Was that against Seattle in week two? They lost that game, but they did cover by a very half a point or so. New England historically has performed well against the spread when hosting the Colts, winning their last five games against Indianapolis against the spread at home. But I think Mr. Tom Brady had a lot to do with that. Despite their struggles, the Colts have a chance to bounce back against a New England team that's they're in full rebuild mode. While the Patriots have shown some offensive improvement with May under center, the Colts have the edge in most areas, particularly with Taylor potentially finding success against a Patriots defense that hasn't been as good as last year. Expect the Colts to win straight up. The Patriots tend to keep it close and competitive until the fourth quarter. Then I think they're in tank mode. And Indianapolis absolutely needs this game to even have a shot at the postseason. Despite their good ATS record, the Colts actually have a negative 0.1 point differential against the spread. All their covers have been so close. I may not make it to the window with this game. I predict the score. I think the Colts will win 24-20. Take the Indianapolis Colts -2.5 over the New England Patriots and take over 42.5. All right. The 6-5 Seattle Seahawks go to New York. The Jets are 3-8. Seattle right now are 1-point favorites. The total in this game is 42.5. This game opened with the Jets favored by 0.5, and it swung the other way now. The Seahawks are aiming to make a push for the playoffs, riding high after a two-game win streak. I remember they won off the bye and 2 weeks ago, and then they beat Arizona, who were coming off the bye last week. Meanwhile, the Jets have had a rough stretch, losing 7 of their last 8 games. Despite their challenges, they have key pieces like Aaron Rodgers, who's attempting to salvage a disappointing season. Geno Smith returns to MetLife Stadium, where he began his career with the Jets. While his history with the team is a point of intrigue, to say the least, his current performance is what really matters. Smith is having a solid season, ranked 2nd in the NFL with 3,035 passing yards, but also leading the league in interceptions with 12. He's been carrying an offense with little help from the run game and a subpar offensive line. How Smith handles the pressure and continues to produce will have significant implications for its contract negotiations this offseason, so I think he'll be highly motivated. Aaron Rodgers is coming off the bye week. We'll start in the middle of a lot of controversy. I mean, question marks remain. Is this the beginning or the end? Beginning of the end of his career? Rodgers is coming off a string of good performances, including 139 consecutive pass attempts without an interception. I mean, he's got the tools, but his play down the stretch will be pivotal, I think, if he's going to continue his career in 2025. You never know with that guy. Geno Smith has struggled under pressure this season. Last week, he was sacked 5 times, making, I guess that's the third game this season in which he's taken that many sacks. Only Deshaun Watson, who's no longer playing, he's out. And I think it's Will Levis have been sacked more often in similar games. The Jets defense, which ranks 2nd in the NFL in pass defense, will need to apply pressure to stifle Smith's production. I think they can. I think that's a very good secondary that they have. Jets wide receiver Garrett Wilson is primed for a bounce back game after a quiet stretch over the past 2 games. He was really hot up until just recently. Over the past 2 games, he's only had 14 targets and 14.9 fantasy points. However, the Seahawks defense has been one of the most generous to wide receivers in the last month, making Wilson a great fantasy option this week, maybe even a possible prop bet. I'm not sure if I put money on him, but I would put him on my fantasy roll for this week. The Seahawks are 1-5 against the spread in their last 6 games as favorites. They're not favored all the time. I'm trying to think. Yeah, they did not cover against the Patriots, and off the top of my head, can't remember others, but they're not very good as favorites. The Jets have allowed 26.2 points per game under interim coach Jeff Ulbrich, up from just 17 under Robert Saleh. You know, their record since Saleh is terrible, and I can't remember now where Saleh, he joined a different team, and that team's 5-1 since Saleh came on I think his capacity as an assistant anyways, the Jets have not been doing well since they fired him. Seattle's had mixed results, like I said, as a favorite, but their offensive firepower could help them overcome the Jets' struggles to score points. You know, Jets' offense has not been very good, and that's why their record is not very, very good this year. The Jets seem to be the forgotten team of the NFL after so much hype at the beginning of the year. Oh. This matchup could go either way, given the talent on both sides, but also the inconsistencies each team has shown. Geno Smith's ability to stay calm under pressure and Aaron Rodgers' ability to lead a comeback will be key. With the Seahawks riding momentum and the Jets dealing with internal turmoil of all kinds, I think Seattle gets the win here. I predict maybe 23-20 for the Seahawks. Take the Seattle Seahawks minus the 1 point over the New York Jets and take over 42. I will not make it to the window with that bet. The Tennessee Titans are at the Washington Commanders. Washington 7-5, hosting Tennessee, or 3-8 at FedEx Field this Sunday, today. The Titans come off a road win. They were coming off the road win against Houston. Surprising win there. They snapped the 6-game losing streak against the spread. Titans have been terrible ATS this year. However, they remain one of the most inconsistent teams in the league. The Commanders are hoping to turn things around after a 3-game losing streak that's put a dent in their playoff hopes. A storyline to watch will be Will Levis's continued progression. Levis has been a bright spot for Tennessee over the past few games. The second-year quarterback is completing 68% of his passes, 748 yards and 5 touchdowns, over his last three games. Levis has discovered an ability to make explosive plays with 8 passes of 20 or more yards during that span, a stat that I like to keep track of. When you can hit 20-yard passes, that keeps the other defense on their toes, opens up the running game, everything, and Levis has been good recently. Facing Washington's defense, which ranks fourth in the NFL against the pass, allowing only 189 yards per game, Levis will need to stay sharp to keep the Titans competitive. For the Commanders, their struggling offense needs a spark. After a promising start, the Commanders' offense has faltered in recent weeks. They've averaged just 3.9 yards per play over the last two games and only 99.3 rushing yards per game during their three-game losing streak. Washington's running game, which was a strength earlier in the season, has been largely ineffective, facing a tough Titans defense that allowed just 3 yards per rush over the last three games, much improved, with Tennessee's pass defense allowing 7.9 yards per attempt since Week 10. The Titans defense actually is pretty good. Commanders rookie quarterback Jaden Daniels, who's just behind Lamar Jackson in rushing yards per quarterback, has run the ball only 7, 7, and 3 times in the last three games, well below his early season average. All those games have been losses. A stat you might want to know also is Titans wide receiver Calvin Ridley has been one of the league's top playmakers since Week 8, ranking third in the NFL with 451 yards receiving. Ridley's ability to stretch the field could be a key for Tennessee, especially if Levis continues to target him on explosive plays. Titans running back Tony Pollard is having a strong season and should be in line for another solid performance. He's on pace for his third straight 1,000-yard rushing game with 18 or more touches. In 5 of his past 7 games, Pollard has scored 10-plus fantasy points in 5 of those games, including 3 games over 18. So he's been a good kind of pick up on fantasy. Given Washington's struggles against running backs, allowing 22.2 fantasy points per game, Pollard is a high floor, high ceiling fantasy option today. The Titans are 2-9 against the spread. I've documented their struggles all year. Tennessee's win over Houston snapped a 6-game against the spread losing streak, but they're 0-8 straight up after a win over the last two in the last two seasons, I guess. The Commanders have averaged just 5.5 yards per play since Week 8, compared to 6.3 yards per play in the first 7 weeks. Washington was one of the darlings for bettors early through the first half of the year, but they haven't beaten a good team in a while. And now that the Titans are off the ATS Chennai, they could keep this game interesting. Washington's really limping in their bye week with the Titans. You're getting points with a better defense, something I like to look at. Titans are number 2 in the NFL at stopping the pass. The Commanders are number 4, so I expect a close, low-scoring game. I think it'll be like 20-17 either way. Take the Tennessee Titans plus 6 over Washington and take under 44.5. Okay, so I guess we're halfway home. I'm going to take a look at some of these lines, see if there's any movement. What's interesting tonight, probably the most interesting line we're going to watch is in Buffalo. There's a lot of snow, and the line opened up 6.5. It had gone down to 6. Still seeing a couple of 6s, 6.5s. Mostly Buffalo's getting 78% of the love right now. The Philadelphia-Baltimore game is interesting. Pretty well split. I like the games that are like that. Philadelphia's getting 54% of the betting action. Baltimore 46 as we're speaking. These kind of numbers don't really change in the first hour of the show, so we'll see what happens. They tend to start popping halfway through the second segment. Houston-Jacksonville. Houston's getting 71%. Yeah, people have just they're just not backing Jacksonville anymore. Tampa Bay's getting 74% over Carolina. Carolina might have turned the corner, though. You know, we'll talk about them later on. They were so bad at the beginning of the year, but they seem to have righted the ship somehow. It might surprise. I mean, it was no surprise to me that they kept it close against Kansas City last week. And here's a team that I never thought they were as bad as they appeared to be. I mean, they lost a lot of games, but didn't seem that bad. Anyways, after the commercial break, we'll look at the Houston Texans, Jacksonville Jaguars, and Los Angeles Rams, New Orleans Saints games. You're listening to Let's Take the Man's Money, live from the studios of CKDJ. I am Gio. We'll be right back after the news.
The following program is for entertainment purposes only. Betting involves financial risk and is not suitable for everyone. Always bet responsibly and never wager more than you can afford to lose.
Welcome to Let's Take the Man's Money with Gio on CKDJ 107.9, your go-to source for NFL betting insights, odds, and expert picks. Whether you're chasing that perfect parlay or looking for the latest line movement, Gio has the strategies and stats to help you beat the book. Get your playbook ready. It's Sunday morning, and it's time to take the man's money.
And we're back with Let's Take the Man's Money. From the studios of CKDJ, I am Gio. It's the second hour of our show. We hope you're enjoying yourselves as much as I am. Let some friends know about us, and please make sure to follow us on X, hashtag LTTMMNFL. Our next game on the docket has the Houston Texans at Jacksonville. The Texans are 3.5-point favorites right now. The over-under number is 44. It just changed for a second. This game actually opened up with the Texans favored by 6.5. So the line did move 3 points. That's with the announcement of the quarterback for Jacksonville. It looks like he'll be playing. Sorry, just looking at my screen flashing. Houston's had a strong hold on the series, winning 11 of the past 13 meetings. Quarterback C.J. Stroud has been impressive in those games. In week four, he threw for 345 yards and 2 touchdowns in a 24-20 win. It's going to be all about Stroud's consistency against Jacksonville. Yeah, C.J. has been dominant against the Jaguars, 929 yards and 6 touchdowns. No interceptions in his 3 games against them. After some inconsistency, Stroud will need to rediscover his form from last year to keep Houston in control of the AFC South. Stroud seems to have dipped a little bit in his play. At least that's my personal opinion. It doesn't seem like he has control like he did of the offense. Last week's game certainly was a weird one, but I kind of blame the defense more than the offense. The Jaguars defense, they're ranked 32nd in DVOA. Oh, that's, what's that stand for again? Defensive Adjusted Value Over Average. One of those funny metrics that I like. They've struggled. And that could allow Stroud to shine. He does, like I said, he does seem to have regressed a little bit as the season has gone. Maybe the defensive coordinators have enough tape on him by now. He's not sneaking up on anybody anymore like he did last year and even the first half of this year. For the Jaguars, a storyline to watch is Lawrence's return. I'm pretty sure he's playing. He's questionable, but it's trending on playing. In about half an hour, we'll probably know for sure as the inactives come out. And that's why the line moved 3 points. Maybe it's too much. I mean, we've talked about how much does a line move when a quarterback change is made. But the other guy's Mac Jones, so maybe the 3 points is understandable. And the Jaguars have been severely impacted by his absence. And I guess he's missed 2 games to a shoulder. It seems like he's missed longer than that. I think the Jaguars had their bye week. Yeah, they're coming off the bye, looking over at the board. Mac Jones, he failed to provide any spark. And the Jaguars scored fewer than 10 points in back-to-back games, 13 in total, actually. Mind you, it came against the Vikings and the Lions, 2 pretty good teams. Still, Lawrence's return should reinvigorate the offense and give Jacksonville a chance to avoid a historic third straight game without scoring double-digit points. I'd have thought they'd done that already by now. They've been bad for a long time. Oh, I shouldn't poke fun at them. A stat to know, close losses for Jacksonville, actually. The Jaguars are 1-6 in one-score games this season, tied with the Bengals for the most such losses in the NFL. So they stunk, but that means that the other teams have mostly stunk as well when they're playing them. Maybe they play down to their level. Their inability to close out close contests has been a significant factor in their rather disappointing season, which actually goes back to the second half of last season. The Jaguars are currently on a very miserable 3-14 straight up run. Good God. The Texas edge rushers can dominate in this game. Houston's edge rushers, Will Anderson Jr. and former Viking Danielle Hunter, have been a force in recent weeks, and I think they're primed to cause havoc against Jacksonville's struggling offensive line. We mentioned a couple of bad offensive lines today. Right guard Brandon Scherff and right tackle Anton Harrison are both first round picks, you know. And Scherff is like young. He's in his prime. And the other linemen were each drafted in the second round. I don't know who the offensive line coach is. Don't know his name. No, but anyways, I think he should be fired or at least do a better job. Anyways, after combining for 5 sacks last week, Messrs. Anderson and Hunter could easily tally another 5 sacks or more against the Jaguars, who've allowed significant pressure on their quarterbacks. Take over the sacks on a prop bet, at least for the against the Jaguars. I think they'll get 5. Tank Dell might be a fantasy factor. He's been a consistent fantasy performer, scoring 10-plus fantasy points in 3 of his last 4 games. With Nico Collins likely to attract heavy defensive attention, Dell could be in for a big game against the Jaguars' defense that ranks near the bottom in allowing fantasy points to wide receivers. The Texans are 9-3 against the spread in their last 12 games at Jacksonville, so it's been pretty one-sided. And they're also strong against divisional opponents before their bye week. Teams play better before their bye week than after. I mean, when I did YouTube prognostication videos, I sort of got to learn that. Better to bet on a team going into the bye than coming out of the bye. And that's shown this year with the records of teams after the bye. The Texans have a solid 70.1% ATS record when, like I said, now that's 70.1% when they're heading into their bye. And like I mentioned, 7-3 against the spread this year for teams coming off the bye makes them a strong bet in this spot. Despite some recent struggles, the Texans should bounce back against a Jaguars team that's they've been a mess all season. I don't know what happened to Houston last week other than they got the dreaded 7:02 call, if you know what I mean. Running back Joe Mixon was terrible. Actually, he was terrible last week, but he's been bad in 2 of the last 3 weeks. He should do better against the NFL's 26th worst rush defense. The Jaguars allow the second most points scored against. There were a lot of really odd coaching decisions, like not taking a knee at the end of the first half and gifting the Titans a free field goal, stuff like that went wrong for Houston. They actually wasted a pick 6 last week. It was a flat spot for Houston, so I'm going to forgive them for that loss. What better team to face than the Jaguars when you need to get right, as Jacksonville is on a horrific 4-39 straight up and 10-33 ATS skid versus teams with better records since 2011. The Geo script is actually in play. A team usually plays flat the first game their star player comes back. I don't even care that we're betting against a home division dog here. I'm going to predict a bit of a blowout here. Say the Texans 37, Jacksonville 17, 37-17, something like that. So take the Houston Texans -3.5 over the Jacksonville Jaguars and take over 44. All right. I think this might be the blowout of the week. So anyways, so we've got the Los Angeles Rams are 5-6 going to New Orleans. The Saints are 4-7. It's a 4:05 start. The Rams are 2.5-point favorites right now, and the total in this game is 49.5. This game features two teams vying for playoff spots in the NFC. You're never out at 4-7 in the NFC South, and you know the Rams are in the West Division. Two very tough, close divisions. The Rams are slight favorites here, despite having just dropped a tough game in Week 12. On the other side, the Saints, well, they're fresh off a bye week, if that means anything. They won 2 straight since firing head coach Dennis Allen. Probably not a good time to have had their bye, actually. All right, some storylines to watch. Jared Verse versus Talies Fuaga. I've mentioned Verse several times. He's a defensive rookie of the year candidate, and I really like the guy. I think he's been very impressive as a rookie, leading his class with 51 pressures. Verse has predominantly lined up on the right edge, where he'll likely face Saints rookie left tackle Fuaga. Fuaga has been one of the league's top performers in terms of pressures allowed, with only 7.4 pressure rate. 7.4%. That's the lowest of any rookie tackle. And this draft class was very good in tackles. So he's in some good company. And a lot of the other tackles were actually drafted ahead of him. This could be a pivotal matchup. Also, you might want to look at Alvin Kamara's role on the offense for the Saints. Kamara's been one of the few bright spots for the Saints this season. Despite the team's struggles, he's been heavily relied on, averaging 21.6 touches and 111.4 total yards per game. The Saints are getting healthier, and Kamara is poised to have a major impact against the Rams, who have struggled defensively against the run. They're only 28th. Los Angeles allowed 314 rushing yards in their week 12 loss, a pretty concerning statistic for their chances this week. A stat to know, Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua's consistency, the Rams wide receiver duo of Kupp and Nacua have been highly productive since they both returned from injury. Kupp and Nacua are the only wide receiver teammates to each have 400 receiving yards since week 8. So these guys are very good. This consistency has been crucial to the Rams' offensive game plan, and it'll be a key against the Saints defense, which ranks 29th against the pass in yards per game. I think a lot of that damage was done earlier in the year, though. Saints will need to control the clock. With the Rams' struggle on defending the run, expect Kamara to be fed heavily in this matchup. He is a good candidate for over rushing yards and on a prop bet and even total yards. So I would take him. We've mentioned Kamara as a prop bet candidate a couple of times this year, and he's come through for us. The Saints are likely to control the tempo and keep the Rams' offense off the field with long, hopefully long, sustained drives led by Kamara. This strategy could set up a big day for him, especially as the Saints look to wear down the Rams' defense. Kamara is a must-start in fantasy today. The Rams are 5-1 against the spread as road favorites since 22, but Matthew Stafford's historical struggles against the Saints, he's 2-5 on the road with 14 touchdowns and 11 turnovers. That could play a role in the outcome. The Saints have been strong coming off the bye week. Teams haven't done well off the bye this year. They're 3-2 straight up. And again, I want to mention how the teams aren't good against the spread. They're 3-2, which isn't bad, but they're 0-5 against the spread following their bye week during that span. So something to consider. Both teams are fighting for playoff positioning. But the Saints in particular have their backs against the wall. New Orleans seems refreshed after changing their coach. I think the wrong team is favored, so I'll just have to take the points in what should be a very high-scoring game. Although you can never trust these obvious potential shootouts, I think the final score will be Saints 27, Rams 24. So take the New Orleans Saints plus 2.5 over the Los Angeles Rams and take over 49.5. All right. This is the shortest segment of the show. We only got two games in, so we'll get a couple more and maybe the Sunday Nighter in the next segment. You're listening to Let's Take the Man's Money from the studios of CKDJ. I am Gio. We'll be right back.
We now return to Let's Take the Man's Money with Gio on CKDJ 107.9.
And just like that, we're back. Live from the CKDJ studios, I'm Gio. You're listening to Let's Take the Man's Money. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. Four games left. The 5-6 Tampa Bay Buccaneers go to Carolina, where the Panthers are 3-8. Tampa Bay are 6-point favorites in this game. The total is 46.5. Well, the Buccaneers visit Carolina as they aim to stay alive in the NFC South race. The Bucs are not quite touchdown favorites. -6, has that moved? Taking a peek. It's been a rough year for both teams in 24. The Bucs have really been bitten hard by the injury bug, and the Panthers, well, they just suck. Although they've been playing better lately. Tampa's ground game dominance is something I want to look at. The Bucs have turned their offense around since last season, largely thanks to a revitalized rushing attack. After ranking dead last in rushing yards per game in 23, they now rank 10th with 128 yards per game. Toss in their 7th-ranked passing attack, and this is a really good offense. The newfound rushing attack will go up against the Panthers' league-worst run defense. Oof. And allowing 160.6 rushing yards per game, expect Tampa to lean heavily on the running back trio of Rashad White, Bucky Irving, and Sean Tucker. Their success on the ground could open up the passing game for Baker Mayfield and wide receiver Mike Evans. Mayfield's having a great year. For the Panthers, a storyline to watch is Bryce Young's development, the second year quarterback. After a rough start, Young has been improving, most recently stringing together a solid three-game stretch where the Panthers went 2-1 straight up. They had it all tied up against the Chiefs last week until losing on the last-second field goal. Young has avoided turnovers in consecutive games for the first time this season, which is promising for the offense. However, the Panthers still struggle to keep opponents from scoring, allowing an NFL-worst 30.9 points per game. Their minus 146-point differential is dead last in the NFL, but they're plus one in their past three games. So they've stopped the bleeding in that regard. In their Week 12 win over the Giants, the Bucs actually made history by having four different players score a rushing touchdown in the same game. Funny, because most of the Buccaneers' touchdowns this year had been coming through the air. Buccaneers tight end Kate Otten has been heavily involved in the passing game and should continue to play a key role, especially with Evans attracting most of the coverage from defenders the other guy, Chris Godwin, he's still out. So before the bye, Otten was scoring consistently, and this matchup against the Panthers defense that allows the most fantasy points to tight ends, well, it bodes well for his potential today and maybe even as a prop bet. The Panthers have shown improvement recently, covering in three straight games after a 1-7 start against the spread. However, the Buccaneers have also covered in their last three games. You know, a lot of people counted Tampa Bay out because of their injuries to their wide receivers, but Baker Mayfield just kept that offense humming and kept the games close. Both teams have a tendency to hit the over, with Carolina posting the second most overs in the NFL and Tampa Bay not far behind. Despite some recent improvements from Bryce Young and the Panthers, the Buccaneers are playing for their playoff lives and have the advantage in key areas like the run game. Carolina's defensive woes against the run and in pass coverage will likely be too much to overcome. I do not like betting against home division dogs, you know that, so I can't make it to the window with this game. Even though I think for Carolina, their Super Bowl was last week, they took the two-time champs right to the brink. You know, there might be a bit of a flat spot for them in this game. I kind of expect a letdown here. I really, really love the over in this game, and it'll be one of my top plays, actually. I think the final score will be Tampa Bay 33, Panthers 27, which would be a push. Since I have to make a pick, take the Carolina Panthers plus 6 over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Take the over 46.5. That's the better play. If you can get the Panthers at 6.5, that would be better to take Carolina. But if the line drops to 5.5, jump on Tampa. But for me, the better play is over 46.5. Next up, we have the Eagles and the Ravens. Well, that's a good game. Philadelphia 9-2, Baltimore 8-4. What's the line in this game? Baltimore minus 3. Yeah, okay, pretty even money. The total in this game is high, 51. The Ravens are always going over the total. 9-2, Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah, this should be a great game. For the Eagles, the story you want to watch is Saquon Barkley's dominance. I mean, he's on fire. He's coming off a career-best performance against the Rams, where he racked up 255 rushing yards and 302 yards from scrimmage. Wow. And a lot of people had written him off as being too old. He's now leading the NFL in rushing yards, and Derrick Henry, the number two guy, has actually played one more game than he has. This will be a critical matchup for the Eagles' ground game as they face the Ravens' strong run defense. Barkley's dominance, his dominant performance will potentially be crucial for Philly's success in a game that could come down to which offense can overpower the other in the trenches. Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson continues to thrive against NFC opponents, holding, like, I think his record is 23-1 in interconference games. He just owns the NFC for some reason. This is like the best in the NFL history since the 1970 merger. However, he faces a stiff test in the Eagles, who've been dominant on defense during their 7-game win streak. The Eagles' defense has allowed the fewest passing yards per game, only 140, very low in today's NFL, and the fewest yards per attempt, 5.4 over that span. Jackson will need to rely on his versatility to overcome Philadelphia's tough defense and keep the Ravens competitive. A stat you might want to know, this game marks just the second time since 1970, again that number, that two teams averaging 180 rushing yards per game will meet in week 13 or later. That's an interesting stat. With Barkley handling most of the offense, handling most of the offense last week, tight end Dallas Goedert had a quiet game, but he's poised for a bigger role in this matchup. The Ravens defense has allowed the fourth most receiving yards to tight ends, so Goddard is a significant uptick in targets. So if you're looking for a tight end on your fantasy roll, the Ravens have hit the over 10 of their 12 games this season. That's the highest. I think they did not go over early in the year against the Giants, who always went under, and they didn't go over in that battle against Pittsburgh where we actually had the under in that game. So good for us, and good for you if you took that bet. This will be a clash of two high-powered offenses, and the key to the game, well, who controls the line of scrimmage and who imposes their will on the ground? Both teams run the ball great. I mean, they're numbers one and two in running, but both teams stop the run. I believe Baltimore is number one and against the run, and Philadelphia number seven. So that's a wash. Baltimore also passes the ball well, and the Eagles don't defend well against the pass. So ultimately, that's a big advantage for the home team. If the Ravens can force the Eagles to pass the ball, this will set up nicely for them. I mean, you don't want Philadelphia throwing the ball too many times. I mean, that's been their sort of mantra. Run the ball. The quarterback does just enough. I think that'll be key in this game. And, you know, Philadelphia has a lot of trouble scoring in the first quarter. So if Baltimore starts to run away with it a little bit, and Philly might be forced to throw the ball, this won't bode well for Philadelphia. I think, what did they say, that they scored 3 points last week? They've scored 0 points in the first quarter eight or so times this year. That's a really odd statistic for a team that wins so many games. You know, now they're playing, Philadelphia's playing against like Baltimore, Lamar Jackson at Baltimore. That's a tough situation for any team, but like I said, Lamar's control over the NFC, I've never seen anything like that. It's about as difficult of a game to win as there is. This should be a high-scoring game, too. I'm not sure I'm going to make a prediction on the score, but I like Baltimore here simply because Lamar just does so well against the NFC. Take the Baltimore Ravens -3 over the Philadelphia Eagles and take over 51, especially the over. All right, we're going to our Sunday night game. 49ers are there 5-6, and they're traveling to Buffalo, who are 9-2. Like I said, there was snow forecast. It's not going to be a nice evening to play football. Buffalo is, looking at the board, -6 favorites. The total in this game is 44.5. The Niners are on the verge of a crucial tipping point in their season, with their playoff hopes hanging in the balance. They face one of the toughest challenges of the year in the Buffalo Bills at, what do they call it now, Highmark Stadium? The 49ers are in danger of dropping three straight games, a scenario they haven't faced all season and in a long time, actually. Meanwhile, the Bills are coming off their bye week. Not that that means a lot, but they've won six straight games and can clinch the AFC East with a victory here. They're really running away with that division, and Miami racked with injuries, the Jets disappeared, and New England, all kinds of troubles scoring points. So the Bills will wrap it up already with a win here. The Bills are unbeaten at home this season, scoring over 30 points in every home game. San Francisco will need to play its best to avoid further damage to its playoff aspirations. That NFC West is still up for grabs. The Niners, well, they've been plagued by injuries all season, and the team's lack of depth is starting to show. Quarterback Brock Purdy, his status is uncertain. And his backup, Brandon Allen, he struggled in the Niners loss to Green Bay last week. In addition to the 49ers' once dominant running game, in addition to his just struggles, that running game, where did it go? Since returning from injury, star running back Christian McCaffrey has only averaged 50 yards rushing and 42 yards catching in his three games, well off his career average. You know, sometimes running backs age overnight, and that might have happened to McCaffrey. I'm not saying it has, but I'm just saying he's just not the same. They have injuries on both sides of the ball, including stud Nick Bosa. Their wide receiving core is thin. The Super Bowl hangover has been very unkind to the Niners this year. Bills quarterback Josh Allen has been playing at an MVP caliber level, particularly in primetime games. Where's he from? He's from Fireball, California. So he actually grew up as a Niners fan. You know, he'll face his childhood team with a chance to further boost his MVP candidacy. I don't know if he's going to be the MVP, but he's got to be in the mix. You know, considering that the wide receiver core was gutted from last year, he hasn't missed a beat. The Bills have thrived in December, winning 14 straight regular season games during this time, with an offense averaging over 30 points per game and a defense that's been focusing, they forced turnovers at a solid clip. The Bills are riding high and will be hard to stop at home. Oh, and it's going to be cold. San Francisco's been penalized 18 times in their past two games, matching their most penalties over a two-game stretch in the past five seasons. And they're showing a lack of discipline. Fantasy factor might be James Cook. With potentially snowy conditions, the Bills might rely heavily on their running game, and Cook's been a steady contributor, scoring 15 or more fantasy points in three of his last four games. He could be in for a big workload on Sunday night, making him a key fantasy asset. You know, the Bills are 6-0 following a bye week. Maybe they'll buck the trend of this year. That's under head coach Sean McDermott. And they have been dominant at home this season. San Francisco has been solid on primetime games, 3-0 straight up and against the spread this season. But their recent struggles combined with the uncertainty at quarterback, that leaves them very vulnerable, I would say. The Bills have won 14 consecutive regular season games in December or later, a streak that extends their, you know, it shows their dominance in the second halves of seasons. With so many injuries at so many positions, quarterback, wide receiver, right tackle, right guard, defensive tackle, defensive end, how can the Niners expect to keep this one close? Even the chance of slipping in through the back door is not in play because the Bills actually love running up the score. Buffalo's plus 106 point differential is second in the NFL, only behind the Detroit Lions. If you thought San Francisco's 38-10 loss to Green Bay last week was bad, this one might even be worse. You know, the Bills definitely want to win. They want to keep up with Kansas City in the hopes that they do get that coveted home field advantage in the playoffs. My nephew has gone to this game. He's in Buffalo. He's a big San Francisco fan, and he's listening to the show. Sorry about that, nephew, but I'm going to bet against your team today. Take the Buffalo Bills -6 over the San Francisco 49ers and take over 44.5. Yeah, I'm going to stick with that. This game should come down to a lot of running. And I think Buffalo can run the ball. And, you know, they have so much experience playing in the cold. I like Buffalo. Okay. Just one more game left to talk about. After the commercial break, we'll look at the Monday night football game between the Cleveland Browns and the Denver Broncos. We'll review all of our picks and rank them, and we'll talk about our parlay play and our three-game teaser. You're listening to Let's Take the Man's Money, live from the studios at CKDJ. I am Gio. We'll be right back.
CKDJ 1079.
We now return to Let's Take the Man's Money with Gio on CKDJ 1079.
Welcome back to the final part of our show. You're listening to Let's Take the Man's Money, live from the studios of CKDJ. I am Gio. Our last game has the 3-8 Cleveland Browns going to Denver. The Broncos are 7-5. There are 5.5 favorites in this game. The total is 41.5. Jerry Jeudy faces his old team. Wide receiver Jerry Jeudy, he was traded from the Broncos to the Browns earlier this year. He returns to face Denver for the first time since the trade. Jeudy, who requested the move, has seen a significant uptick in performance, ranking 10th in receiving yards, 379 since week 8. However, he faces a tough challenge against Broncos cornerback Pat Surtain II, who's been solid in coverage, allowing just 182 yards as the nearest defender, the second lowest among cornerbacks with 200-plus coverage snaps. I like that one. That's a new metric for me. I'm going to keep track of that one, too. It's all about protecting Bo Nix. You know, the rookie quarterback is showing promise, but the Broncos face a tough test against a Browns defense that's been especially effective against rookie quarterbacks. Well, who hasn't? But they have. Nix has excelled in recent weeks, but Browns defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz is known for shutting down first-year quarterbacks. I've always liked Schwartz as a coordinator. The Bronx will likely need to rely more on their running game to mitigate the pressure Nix faces from a Browns defense that ranks fifth in sack percentage at 8.8%. The Browns are struggling on third downs with the NFL's worst 27% conversion rate on third down. This will make it harder for them to sustain drives, especially against the Broncos defense that excels at limiting passing yards and forcing turnovers. Denver's defense has been one of the best in the league, ranking fourth in pressure rate, 39.6%, and 10th in interceptions with 9 of them. This will be key in neutralizing Jameis Winston, who's been prone to turnovers this season. I'm a big Jameis Winston fan. Bo Nix has been a strong fantasy performer, 19 or more points in 5 of his last 8 games. If you're looking for a cheap quarterback on your fantasy role, you might want to consider Nix. With Cleveland's defense giving up the 12th most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks, Nix could be in for another productive outing, especially with his top target Cortland Sutton playing well. Cleveland has struggled on Monday Night Football, going 2-7 against the spread in their last 9 Monday Night Football games. Head coach Kevin Stefanski is also just 1-3 against the spread in those situations. The Broncos are undefeated against the spread at home, 5-0 this season, and have a solid 9-3 straight up and 8-3-1 ATS record in their last 12 pre-bye games. Rookie quarterbacks have performed well on Monday night, so it sort of bucks the trend of what we were saying earlier. So that'll be interesting. What bodes well for Nix and the Broncos. Denver has been solid, especially at home, and Cleveland's offense is far from consistent. While Winston has shown flashes, his tendency to make risky throws could be exploited by Denver's defense. With the Broncos riding a strong defensive wave and the Browns struggling on both sides of the ball, I think Denver should come out on top. I'm going to make a prediction of the score, say Denver 27, Cleveland 13. So take the Denver Broncos -5.5 over the Cleveland Browns and take under 41.5. I'm curious to know if that line is going to change. That's the Monday nighter, so I expect movement in that line. If you can get it now at -5.5, I think it'll trend the other way. So grab it now. Okay, and there you have it. All 12 of the remaining games from this week are now in the books. Let's recap my favorites and the ones I will be betting on, the ones I won't be betting on. But you know, we're all in our ATS pools, so we have to make a decision. My favorite play, my number one play, are the Indianapolis Colts -2.5 over the New England Patriots. The Colts do cover a lot of games. You know, they have covered the last 3 of the last 4, but the Patriots, I think they're tanking. They seem to do well up until the fourth quarter, and then it all just fades away. So if the line is tight, just wait for the fourth quarter, and you'll see the Colts running away. That's my favorite play, Indianapolis -2.5. I like the Arizona Cardinals +3.5 over my Minnesota Vikings. I want to take a quick peek right now. The Vikings are getting 64% of the money. That opened up at 4.5, and now down to 3.5. I don't know if that's reflected in the Vikings getting 64% of the money. I know my Vikings very well. Yeah, they're winning a lot of games. They're, 9-2, but they played some bad teams. They almost lost to Chicago, a team that's only won 4-8, and they're so bad they fired their coach. They played Tennessee recently, a very bad team. Jacksonville, a very bad team. Arizona struggled last week, but I think, you know, they lost some momentum going into the bye. They had 1-4 straight. I think they bounced back. I think Arizona is just as good as Minnesota. Records aside, I'd like them to cover the 3.5. For my third game, I do like the Buffalo Bills -6 over San Francisco. The Niners are just, they've just been hit by too many injuries. They travel from one end of the country to another. Yeah, you know, that's factored in the line already. But Buffalo likes to pile it on. I think they cover easily. So Buffalo -6. I like the New Orleans Saints +2.5 over the Rams. I like the Rams. They passed the ball really well, and the Saints, you know, struggled after a pretty good early start, but you know, they're getting the points. I think they can hold off the Rams. I think they can control the game. There's probably be a closer game than you think. They could even win the game straight up. So I like New Orleans plus 2.5. I like Houston Texans minus 3.5 over the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are just a mess. You know, I don't know what happened in Houston last week, but maybe they were in a flat spot. I think they get right against Jacksonville. I really like Pittsburgh plus 3 over the Cincinnati Bengals. Like I said, Pittsburgh's been my nemesis over the last couple of years picking, but it seems to be getting them right a little bit. I like the Steelers with points anytime, and I really like the over, the 47. I think I like the over 47 as much as, if not more, maybe even one of my top picks, over 47 in the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game. And my last game I really like is the Carolina Panthers-Tampa Bay game, over 46.5. I think that'll be a shootout. Carolina are getting better. They've covered, what, three straight? They've won two of the last three. They almost beat the Chiefs. Tampa Bay still scores a lot of points. I like that over. Games that I won't be making to the window with Seattle Seahawks. What's that? Minus 1 point. I like them over the Jets. The Jets are in a better spot, but they're coming off the bye. Seattle is a team that I've struggled to get right last little while, but the Jets are just terrible. And I like Seattle minus the 1 point. I like Denver minus 5.5 over the Cleveland Browns. The LA Chargers minus 1 over Atlanta Falcons. I've been a big fan of the Chargers all year. Atlanta, well, you know, they have the ability to win that game, but I do like, gun to my head, I like the Chargers. Yeah, it won't make it to my top state, but I'll pick them. I like Tennessee plus 6 over the Washington Commanders, barely. I like the total in that game, as I said earlier. If I had to, I'll take the points in that game. And same with the plus 6 of Carolina over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's a division game. And Carolina is the home dog. I always like to take home dogs. They're only getting 26% of the love, and the line is actually holding. That's a good sign that sharp money and syndicate money is probably on Carolina. As for let's take the man's money parlay play. Let's go with the Indianapolis Colts minus 2.5 over New England, the Arizona Cardinals plus 3.5 over Minnesota, and the Sunday nighter, Buffalo Bills minus 6 over San Francisco. A $25 bet will bring back $173.90. Now, when I had my YouTube channel, I used to get a couple of other plays in there with four, sometimes even five games on a parlay. So if you want to take the same bet, I do believe that the Baltimore Ravens will win their game straight up. You know, whether they cover or not, I think they'll cover, but I do think they'll win. They're tough at home, and they own the NFC. And if you throw that game in on the money line, same $25 bet will now bring you back $297. As for my three-game, six-point teaser play, we'll tease the three teams from the parlay play. I mean, I shook it up last week because I didn't want to have both games involving, both of those bets involving the Monday Nighter. I substituted the one. And I would have, had I just teased the same games from the parlay play to the teaser play, we would have won our teaser. So we'll do that this week. So we'll tease the Colts down to plus 3.5 there, minus 2.5. We'll cross the zero. I know my good friend Half Moon, Keith, Half Moon used to always say, never cross the zero, but Steve, I'm going to do it anyways. And I like Arizona, so we'll tease them up from 3.5 to 6.5, plus 3.5 to 9.5. So Indianapolis plus 3.5, Arizona plus 9.5, and we'll tease the Bills down. We will take the Bills straight up. I know I mentioned earlier in the show, don't always do that. Well, we're only going to do it with one of the games. I just don't think Buffalo loses at home. So Indianapolis plus 3.5, Arizona plus 9.5. And the Buffalo Bills as a pick'em, a $25 bet will return $62.50. So now we'll take a look at the board. Seattle getting 74% of the wagering on the Jets game. That's going to be an ugly game. The teams play ugly. The uniforms are ugly. If there's one game I don't think I'm going to watch, it's that game. My good friend Rostradamus is a Jets fan, and he'll be upset I'm saying that. But yeah, I'll be avoiding that one there, Mr. Rostradamus. I'll be glued to the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game. Joe Burrow is fun to watch, win or lose. If he had a better defense and better offensive line help, he could he could be leading all the stats as a quarterback, as throwing department. I mean, he's got it all. He can even run the ball. You saw him earlier in the year. He ran for a touchdown, a 50-yard touchdown play. Indianapolis getting 70% of the action. That line is holding. So maybe there's there's no sharp money is what I'll say. There's no sharp money coming in on Indianapolis. That's all public money. The line is holding. Washington getting 66% of the wagering. 6.5 open. Sixes. And I see 6.5. I see 5.5. One of the books that I don't bet on always seems to be different from the other one. And I won't mention the name, but 6.5 and sixes across the board. That's not too much of a... Once it crosses the 7, now you're talking. As for Arizona, I'm just looking as we check. It's flashing 3.5. Pretty consistent. I mean, I'm hoping that my Vikings win the game, but they can still win and not cover. Kind of like what they did last week against Chicago in the last Sunday. They almost gave it away, so maybe Minnesota will be trying a little harder this time. But I do think the Cardinals are better than the Bears, so they can keep it close. If you want to sprinkle something on the money line there for Arizona, go right ahead. And the LA Chargers Atlanta game, that's a tough one. I really like the Chargers. They got beaten up last week, and they're coming off the Monday night game. You know, every time you play the Baltimore Ravens, you're always banged up, and the Chargers might be a little bruised from that game, and I can see why that line is holding. Well, it opened at 1.5, now it's down to 1, despite the Chargers getting 63% of the public money anyways. So there's a sign that you might want to consider. I'd just as soon walk away from that game. I mean, it's always, you can always walk away. You don't have to bet on every game. There's 12 today and 11 today and 1 tomorrow because there's 4 games already. That leaves you 12 against the spread options, 12 over-under options, and 12 straight-up options. I mean, you don't have to bet every game. I don't think I make it to the window with that one. Houston getting 71% of the money. That game opened 6.5 and is now 3.5, but that's because Trevor Lawrence looks like he'll be playing for Jacksonville. I don't think that makes that will make much of a difference. And I've mentioned the Geo script several times, where the star comes back in the first game and everyone says, well, you know what? We don't have to play as hard because the star is here. And then the other team says, well, the star is back. We better play harder. And, you know, that first game back, it goes against what you would think logically. But I still like Houston to run away with that game. Tampa Bay getting 74%, open 6.5. Sixes across the board. And, well, no, there's 6.5 there too. So not much has changed since the start of the show. I think I like a lot of the afternoon games watching-wise. I mean, the Rams have a great offense. The Philadelphia-Baltimore game should be a beauty. I mean, hard to bet against Philadelphia. They've been so good to us. They've won, 8 games in a row, 7 games in a row? Usually, that catches up with you. I mean, how many games in a row can you win? Detroit is setting the standard this year. Philadelphia, not far behind. What happens in that situation, though, is... The books, that guy in the smoky room who sets the line, my hero I'd like to meet one day, he takes that into consideration. So you might get some line value here. Well, things like that to look at. Anyways, that was a lot of fun. We'll wrap it up now for week 13 of Let's Take the Man's Money. Good luck with the picks this year. Thanks to my producer, Romano. Congratulations to our big winner, Christopher Carter. Stay tuned for the Sports Lunatic Show. All right. For Let's Take the Man's Money, I am Gio. All together now, Let's Take the Man's Money.
You have been listening to Let's Take the Man's Money with Gio. Tune in every Sunday from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time.